Well, perhaps you know the one I mean. You know the one where it's Lee Ermey is the drill sergeant kind of guy, and he throws the box of tissues, and he says, "What in the world have you done, you mamby-pamby kind of guy?" And I'm guessing that if I had gone home, that's kind of the reaction I would have gotten. Not a very friendly response. Now, this parable, next to that of the Good Samaritan, is probably the one that we have heard the most from. The story of the prodigal son gets used in music, it gets used in theater, it gets used in movies, books. It's told a lot of different ways. But do you really know what the word prodigal means? It means both extravagance and wasteful, which kind of seem like contradicting definitions to me. And yet, if we think of the prodigal, the utmost prodigal, as extravagantly wasteful, then we realize this story is not about the prodigal son. This is a story about the prodigal family. The youngest son is extravagantly wasteful in his father's love and generous provisions. And the oldest son, even though he's a little more responsible in his dealings with his family, he's extravagantly wasteful with his family's relationships. And then prodigal dad, wow, he shows these extravagant amounts of forgiveness and grace. But in the eyes of the older son and in the eyes of that community in which they lived, this dad is also extravagantly wasteful, as he's kind of generous to a fault with his outpouring of love and outpouring of abundant food and clothing. So let's look at this story a little more closely about the prodigal family. All three of these men somehow needed to learn how to treat one another with respect and love. The younger son is like many of us. He's impatient, he's impetuous, and he wants what he wants now. He's not going to wait for it. The older son is also like many of us. You know, the kind that gets angry when someone else benefits from something when they've done nothing to earn it or deserve it. And then there's that forgiving father who is the model for all of us how we should be, welcoming and forgiving and full of love and grace, even when our son is the biggest screw-up out there. We've got a beautiful lesson of human failure and human forgiveness that we all can relate to. Now, we know Jesus doesn't just tell this story that's on this level. Jesus tells stories that have another level to them. So, what's beneath the surface here? What is it that Jesus really wanted us to think about? Frankly, I think this story needs an epilogue. Did you notice that as Carol was reading it, this story doesn't really have an end to it? Dad's there debating with his older son and trying to get him to go into the party. So, what happened? Did he go into the party? What happens the next morning when they wake up? Did these guys ever speak to one another again? This dad obviously adored both of his children. I kind of suspect that maybe he was a single dad, that maybe his wife, the mother of the younger child, had died during childbirth, which would have been common during that time. He was a doting father, and he gave him everything to both of these children. He gave them whatever they wanted, whatever they needed. He treated them well, and he would do anything to make them happy. So then one day, the younger one says, "You know, Dad, I'm not going to wait for you to die. You could live to be 100. I'll be an old man myself by then, and I want my portion of that inheritance now while I can still enjoy myself, while I can still get some of those pretty girls out there and see the world." We don't hear Dad arguing at all. We don't hear Dad trying to dissuade his son. He kind of just divides up the property and sends his son on his way. I don't know what the older son was thinking, but I'm suspecting he wasn't too happy about it. After all, according to Jewish law, that older son was to get a double portion of the inheritance. And with one portion already gone, maybe he was a little concerned about what he was going to receive when the end finally came for his dad. Of course, once the younger son was gone, everything that was left was going to be his, so maybe he was going to be happy that that spoiled brat was gone. Only now, that little brat has returned. What happens to the family now? Well, there's this shift that takes place in the story. The wording kind of changes a little bit. We're no longer focused on the father's son. We're focused on the brother's brother. Dad says, "This brother of yours was dead, and now he's alive. This brother of yours was lost, and now he's found." This is a miracle, isn't it? By taking his inheritance early, this younger son had not only divorced his family, he had basically disowned them and treated them as if they were dead. And by Jewish tradition and law, the father and son who were left also had to treat the younger brother as if he was dead. That was their tradition. But now, here they were back together again. All is forgiven. All are loved and welcomed back into the family. The father defies Jewish law by running to meet his son. And by doing that, he's saying to his community, "I'm welcoming this guy back, and you have to as well." As the emphasis shifts from son to brother, we're reminded that these two brothers are going to have to learn how to get along. They're just going to have to learn how to trust and love and respect one another. The epilogue to this story is about relationship. It's about all of us in this whole human family being brothers and sisters to one another. In the epilogue, the older brother has to step into a new role. He's kind of the patriarch in waiting, if you will. And he's reminded by his father that it's time for him to be more gracious in his treatment of others, especially in his treatment of his brother. It's time for this oldest son to become a man. It's time for him to grow up and become more mature in his relationships. We're all called to mature in our Christian discipleship. We're all called to love one another without judgment and with abundant forgiveness. Open hearts, open minds, open doors. All are welcome, all are loved, all are forgiven. It's been said that without forgiveness, life is governed by an endless cycle of resentment and retaliation. The greatest gift that these two sons inherit is not the money. It's not the property. It's not the possessions. Their real inheritance comes from their father in the gift of forgiveness. And as they learn to use this gift of forgiveness, they will be able to grow in their love for one another and their acceptance of others. The epilogue to this parable of the prodigal family is the acceptance. It's the receiving of this gift of forgiveness. And not just the receiving of it and the acceptance of it, but passing it on to others. There are three kinds of forgiveness, and all of them are interrelated. There's self-forgiveness, which enables us to release our guilt. And then there's the forgiveness that we extend to others and that we receive from them, friends and enemies alike. And then, of course, there is the forgiveness of God that assures our worth and strengthens us as we practice forgiveness in every aspect of our lives. And that brings us to our stream of thought for today, which is, the practice of forgiveness is our most important contribution to the healing of the world. We are the epilogue to this story. We are the prodigals that are called to be extravagantly wasteful in our forgiveness. To forgive yourself and to forgive others is to release trapped energy that could be doing good in the world. This Sunday, the first Sunday after Pentecost, the United Methodist Church calls Peace with Justice Sunday. And I can think of no greater force to create peace with justice than forgiveness. But can't you just envision that prodigal family waking up the morning after the great celebration? Can't you just see them sitting around the table? I haven't decided which actor should play the father and the older son, but I know without a doubt who plays the younger son. Gotta be Charlie Sheen. So dad's sitting there looking at both of his sons with love, and the brothers are averting their eyes from one another, refusing to look one another in the eye. And dad says something like, "Boys, I love you both, and I hope that both of you can love each other in spite of the past. Now, eldest son, you don't have to like what your brother did, but I hope you can find it in your heart to forgive him and love him. And youngest son, according to our tradition, I don't owe you a thing. I expect you to earn your keep. I expect you to work hard and contribute to the household, just like your elder brother and I do. You need to realize it's going to take some time for your brother to trust you again. But I know this, there's always going to be a place for you here." And then he says to both of them, "I love you guys." And maybe, just maybe, the older son grabs his younger brother in a bear hug and says, "Welcome home, you big screw up." And that's how I see this story ending. We are loved, we are forgiven, no matter how much we mess up. There's always a place for us. Welcome home.